Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast where nothing is fascinating, but nothing is boring. Everything is just interesting. And with me, Robin, today are Martin. Hello, Martin.
Hello. How's it going?
Fine, thank you. I'm very excited because we've got a very special guest on today. One of our oldest friends and one of the best hosts of one of the best podcasts and YouTube channels in the world. It's Chris from the Super Show podcast. Hello, Chris. Oh,
thank you very much. That's overly kind of you and not entirely true, but hey, I'll take what I get, you know?
This podcast is nothing but the truth, Chris. So take my word for it. Everyone listening and watching us on YouTube, Chris is the best Chris on this episode.
I appreciate it, but thanks.
Undeniably true. Well, because Chris is here, we're really lucky about this because we discussed what we're going to discuss today, something we talked about last year, many podcasts ago, about the role of video games and mental health. But particularly, since it's now been a year since this horrible pandemic began and put us all in lockdown, most of us, for more than a year. And Chris, as a gamer, has particularly insightful perspective on the influence that gaming can have on helping people cope with lockdown, especially in the light of some recent medical studies that have just been published looking into the effect gaming has on people during lockdown and how it may have actually helped everybody keep sane in the last year.
100%.
And I think, you know, Chris, you have... I thought you were going to say, Robin, that Chris has first-hand experience because, of course, Chris very recently has been suffering from COVID himself.
He has indeed.
How are you doing, mate? Because... You weren't doing so well a few weeks back, were you? And you've missed a few episodes of the Super Show too.
Yeah. So it was pretty rough. Like before I got COVID, I'd been hearing a bunch of people like from family back home, etc., saying like, "Oh, this person got it, that person got it. It hasn't been too bad. It was more like a really bad cold for them, but you know they knocked it on the head within a week." I was like. Okay, I started, you know, the cog started turning in my head. It's like, you know, all these deaths, maybe, you know, not to take anything away from anyone, but I started thinking maybe it is just a case of old people just being old and, infirm being infirm. Not trying to be insensitive, but just trying to like formulate it through, you know, work it through in my head. But no, I got hit so bad, like so bad. It was ridiculous. Had to go to A&E at one point and check my oxygen levels, etc.
Oh man!
It was. I'll tell you one thing: it was not like a bad cold. It was more like really severe flu or something. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I'm about 95% recovered after about what it's been probably about 5 weeks, maybe six.
Oof, yeah.
Oh man, yeah, that's a long recovery.
Somewhere there. And I'm told that like. It could take really long, like for this residual 5% to go. But yes, so I guess I am the perfect vector of I've had COVID and I run a gaming podcast, which, hey, yeah. if your listeners are interested, they can go to youtube.com/supershowpod and check us out. What I'd like to do, I'd like to have multiple podcasts going on at the same time and just be like, Monday's the gaming podcast, Wednesday's the film podcast, Friday's the this podcast. Keep people really entertained. But in order to do that, that would require... Well, that would just require Patreon to just pay my bills.
It requires you to do it full-time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I would love to do it. Let me pitch you guys on an idea that we've had. if you watch the show, you may know what it is. But we went through a phase of talking about how Matthew Broderick's a murderer, yeah. And I want to do a podcast about it called Known Murderers. And it's about celebrities and all the shady stuff they did. Because, like, Mark Wahlberg is known racist. Oh, yeah.
He beats up a Filipino guy or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, to be fair, it was in their past and people changed, but it's still a pretty despicable thing to do.
Yeah,
murder,
absolutely.
Racism. Yeah. Yeah. Tim Allen, drug dealer.
Yes. Yeah.
There we go.
Reformed, we should say, for legal reasons.
Well, yeah, the way
alleged
we said,
drug dealer.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we were going to get away with it. We're going to say, no, allegedly. Yeah. Whatever we say, you just add on allegedly and you're covered. Allegedly. I'm sure that's how the law works. But Jamie started to get cold feet, and because of the name, he's like, no, you just can't just call it Known Murderers, because then you'd be talking about Tim Allen, and he hasn't murdered anyone, and I've got it. I've solved it recently. In fact, 2 days ago, I've come up with a new name for it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm you're going to be the first people to hear. Jamie and Jonesy haven't even heard this before. The other two people on the podcast.
Okay.
Exclusive. World first.
Let me know your feelings. Okay?
Premier.
It's called Easy Targets.
Okay.
Because Alan Partridge.
Yeah, Alan Partridge. A little bit of it there. Yeah, but it's more. It's a case of saying, hey, they're easy targets for us because they've been doing this douchebaggy kind of things.
Right. Okay.
But they also found easy targets in their murders, the people they've murdered, the people that they beat up and were racial to, you know. I think it fits. I'd like to do it personally, but I think at this stage it's getting the others on board is maybe a little bit too difficult. But hey.
What about an alternative? So we think you're a criminal.
Yeah, to catch an alleged celebrity criminal.
On to the meat of this, well, really the hors d'oeuvre, I guess, of this podcast, which is things that we learned this week.
Would you call it an amuse-bouche?
Oh, an amuse-bouche. I think we just had the amuse-bouche, maybe.
Ah,
I feel like that was a very substantial amuse-bouche. Maybe that was nice. Pre-drinks. We just had pre-drinks. Yes, and now we're into the canapes and the amuse-bouche. Martin, what did you learn this week?
Well, I learned about left-handedness.
Oh,
it's
a thing.
You do know that people are left-handed, Martin.
People are left-handed.
This is not a brand new thing.
Horror. People are left-handed. I remember when us three were working quite closely together, you would never actually know who was left-handed because you're typing away. Well, people don't really use pens.
That's true.
But so I'm a left-handed person.
Those things anyway, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I'm left-handed. Are you guys left-handed? I don't think so. You know, are you? Both right? Both right?
I mean, it depends, right? Because sometimes if you use your left hand, it does feel different when you're doing certain things to yourself.
I see. That's where you're going with this. Okay.
It's called the stranger.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay. See, I was about to make that joke, Chris. And then I realized you were actually talking about that.
Yeah, actually.
I was like, okay, there's nothing I can say here. He's cut me off.
Listen,
straightforward.
If people do know about the Super Show Pod, then they should know that I didn't christen it myself, but I am known as the Dick Man because I talk about dicks a lot. So,
well, I do listen, and it
fair
has,
warning,
it has come up a fair few times.
Oh, that's why the camera is useful because it hides the lower half. Oh.
So
anyway,
so
you're saying about left-handed people.
Sorry, guys. So this is going to be a disaster.
So around 10% of people, it's often cited that around 10% of people in the world are left-handed, but this varies quite dramatically from country to country. Hmm. So the countries with the most left-handed people in the world are Western countries. So the highest is the Netherlands, with 13.2% of people being left-handed.
Okay.
Second place is the United States with 13.1%. Canada is up there, 12.8%, and the UK's on 12.24%.
Wow.
So those are some of the countries with the highest. Some of the lowest include India with 5.2%, Japan with 4.7%, and China at the very bottom with just 3.5% of the population being left-handed. And I think it's fairly well known that they're often in these kind of more traditional conservative cultures. There are the perceptions of left-handedness that are kind of quite negative. Sometimes this is due to like people thinking it's that people using their right hand for like eating and shaking hands, and so using your left hand, which is traditionally like your dirty hand, would be kind of unhygienic. So these kind of traditions have been passed on throughout generations. A lot of it in religions as well. There's like the whole thing of the right hand of God being the one that people refer to, being the favored hand, with you know Jesus sitting at God's right hand side and things like this. Mm-hmm. And so we think of it of having kind of unfavorable perceptions of the left hand. But I learned about some of the more favorable things throughout history in regards to left-handed people.
Okay.
So with the Incas, left-handed people were known as Chechua. I've probably butchered
Chihuahuas,
that.
Chihuahuas, yeah.
Chihuahua. They're known as Chihuahuas, yes.
Any Incan listeners, please tell us if Martin's pronunciation was correct.
Do you guys think of Do you think Chihuahuas are left-handed?
Definitely.
Yeah.
100%. Right, totally. Lots of research has gone into this.
I've digressed. Carry on.
and this means that they're basically the people that have positive value. So they're people that possess special spiritual abilities, including magic and healing.
Oh.
Nice.
So actually, all those left-handedness being a sign of being a witch or witchcraft.
Well,
kind of true in kind of true, Inca
but
society.
It's just whether the perception of witches is a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then in Tantra Buddhism, left-handedness represents wisdom, and in Russian, levsha became a common name, which meant skilled craftsman.
Oh, really?
So, right. Yeah. So there are a few positive connotations that are usually overlooked when people talk about left-handedness. So I thought I'd go in on that as a lefty, and
it's pretty cool.
And back it up. There's also loads of stats about soldiers dying who are left-handed because most weapons are made for right-handers. I think it's about a third more deaths in the army. So we just forget about that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Sweep it under the rug. I'm surprised that it's only 10% though. I really would have thought it would be like higher, like maybe 30 or something.
Yeah, well, if you look at sports, I think it's around close to 40% of baseball players or batsmen are left-handed because it's just beneficial with the curvature of the ball coming into the batsman. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Good in sports.
And then also on your geographical thing, I guess it was quite interesting that the higher populations, you talk about China and India, that they're on the lower spectrum. But yeah, I don't know. Well, I would have thought that the higher the population, the higher the percentage.
Of left-handed people.
Yeah, because there's not more opportunity for that kind of thing to take place, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's kind of cultural in terms of a lot of people are born kind of left-handed but are made to write with their right hand due to cultural norms.
Because China is famous for its very regimented education system, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of left-handed people who are trained to be right-handed. Then what's the literacy rate? Because how else do you know if someone's left-handed, really? Unless they're doing something crafty or writing.
I think someone's left-handed before they're writing. A long time before they're writing.
I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. With your kids, you know if they're left or right-handed. They pick up a ball and throw it, and you're like, they're throwing it with their right hand. Well, they're picking everything up with their right hand.
It's the same with legs, though. You could be left-footed, and you don't necessarily need to be left-handed to be left-footed.
I'm left-handed, right-footed. So.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Can you kick a ball and get a hoop at the same time?
all the time, it's all I do, it's all I practice left-handedness.
Oh, that was great, thank you for that, Martin. That was very enlightening and encouraging for everyone who's left-handed, so indeed. Good news.
You're not alone.
Chris, what did you learn this week?
I'm so glad you asked, okay, because ever since the Just Interesting podcast came into being, I was like, I can't wait to get on here and just talk about my little nuggets, okay? My fact nuggets.
Okay.
Don't say that too fast because you might get it wrong. So it's not necessarily something that I've learned today, but it is something that I find, you know, it's just interesting is what it is.
Hey.
Al Capone, notorious gangster and tax evader.
Yeah.
Well, he was the driving force in bringing expiry dates into being, particularly with milk. There are a couple of theories, and some of them have kind of been debunked, but I think no one's really too sure. The idea was that members of his family were getting ill from drinking milk that had expired. And, you know, being the philanthropist that Al Capone was, he didn't want to see little kids dying from spoiled milk. So, yeah, he lobbied and he came up with the idea of expiry dates. Some people say he came up with the idea. Some people say he was just lobbying for it. Other people say that he had a milk monopoly, and this was a way for him to make more money.
More milk.
Right,
yeah, so I just thought it was quite interesting, that kind of juxtaposition between, like, alleged murderous gangster, easy target, known murderer, Al Capone, and his softer side of trying to, you know, care for the children and their health and well-being. I thought that was quite fun.
I love that. I'm never going to look at an expiry date the same way again. I'm going to think of Al Capone.
You see this quite a lot, don't you, with notorious gangsters paying for their communities, but it's partly to get them on side, of course.
Yeah,
they're not ratted into the police.
Their
PR, their public image and stuff.
Yeah.
But it does make you wonder if there is that side of them. It's like, yes, I've extorted these people. And there's almost that gangster code of, okay, we can do this, this, and this, which is brutal. But we can't touch this subset of people, or we can't do this to children.
It's like this weird dichotomy. No woman, no children, you know, like Leon, the professional.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's always an interesting dichotomy, isn't it, between the brutality of gangster life and then the side of it, which is like, I'm helping the community, regardless of whether they're under tons of coercion.
I can give you a perfect example, right? Because more recently in Greece, the far-right extremist group Golden Dawn, which is now, I believe, no more because they all got thrown into jail for, you know, various nefarious acts. But when they were coming up into power during the hotly contested election, what they used to do is they used to go into the villages and, you know, so at the time Greece was going through austerity measures. A lot of people were kind of killing themselves because, you know, financial woes, bleak future prospects, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So what Golden Dawn would do is these bunch of thugs, essentially, I hope they don't know where I live, but there we go. What they would do is they would go into these villages with these people that are traditionally, I'm talking older people, okay, so 50 plus, that are traditionally voted a particular way, whether it be left or right, whatever it is, didn't matter. And they would go and they'd be like, oh, you're starving. Here are two bags full of groceries. And then, so they'd hand over the groceries and basically they'd say, what has the government done for you? And they're like, shit, you know what? Yeah, the government has done fuck all for me. I'm going to... thank you so much for this food. What can I do? And they'd be like, just vote for us at the next election. And that's how they actually got, I think they got like a couple of seats in parliament. Like, it's mad to think that like a far right extremist group got parliamentary seats, but that's how it happened. And that's as recent as, I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago.
It doesn't take much to buy someone's vote if they're desperate, does it?
Oh, not
it
at
really
all.
Really doesn't.
No.
And
or conversely, not desperate.
Or not, as the case may be. And then I think even in this day and age, with the power of social media, it doesn't take much for something like that to go viral, to build up a big PR presence and to make it look like, you know, you're the good guys, does it? I mean, I think that's only ever going to increase, isn't it? And some of that. So the nasty stuff gets kind of forgotten about, put to the side for a little bit.
Yeah, it's depressing.
Oh, can I give you two more quick little nuggets?
Yeah.
All right. Ants never sleep. That's one.
Really?
Ants never sleep. And a shrimp or prawn, and I don't know if it relates to lobsters, but it's possible. Their heart is in their head.
What?
Ah.
And those two nuggets, there's a third nugget on relating to those two nuggets, because I only know those things because back in the day when Discovery Channel was actually doing interesting stuff rather than like fucking ice road truckers or whatever, when it was more a case of like, hey, here's this interesting stuff about
love that
animals.
Show.
And it's a cool show. I'm not going to lie. But growing up, like Discovery Channel and History Channel,
guess what?
It was about history and geography and animals and history, you know, all that shit. But yeah, they used to have this ident that always used to be this like kind of, here are a bunch of facts. And you'd think that they'd have a bunch of these idents with different facts, but they only had the one ident that had those two, maybe a third fact that I don't remember. And it's just like on repeat, like every ad break. And it's just like drilled into my head. So yeah, ants never sleep. That's kind of become a meme between me and my friends.
Never sleep. What, you and your friends are like massive Discovery Channel fans.
I believe it or not, yeah.
There we go.
And History Channel, when they were always talking about like World War II and stuff.
I
used to love it. Yeah. Not like alien civilizations with like...
You're saying you don't love Aliens of Antarctica?
Yeah.
It's a good topic.
It's a good topic.
Robinho, what have you learned this week?
Oh, what Chris just presented so many facts. I completely forgot that I hadn't
He's told
hadn't
all of your facts.
Thanks for remembering. Yeah.
Those are all my facts. Did you hear that ants never sleep?
No, really? Ants never sleep? Departing from this world, my fact was actually just about I learned the estimated, so this isn't a hard fact, but the estimated number of planets in our universe.
Existential dread incoming.
Yeah. And this is what I love. Okay, so they estimate that there are somewhere between 70 quintillion.
Oh my God.
That's a seven, followed by 20 zeros. Between that and 1 septillion. Which is a one with 24 zeros, planets in the universe.
Quite a range.
Yeah, quite a range.
Not all habitable, though, right?
No, in fact, probably most of them not. But probably a significant number are.
There's going to be a decent number of those planets that are going to have hospitable environments, yeah, and yeah, a decent number of those will harbor life. I mean, it's it makes perfect sense if you think about it, like, scientifically.
But yeah, it's a challenge to find them. So this is what else I learned in the same place, that, for instance, the odds of finding Earth, if you were out there in the galaxy pointing a telescope at Earth, basically using the methodology that we currently use to detect planets orbiting other stars, if you use the same methodology but pointed at our solar system, you'd have a 0.003% chance of discovering Earth.
0.003.
Yeah, I think that was what it was.
So what's that?
It could even be 0.000.
No, three. Ten. What? Oh goodness.
3/1000 of a percent. Yeah. So basically, a tiny fraction.
Wow.
So
I like those odds.
Yeah, those odds are great. Yeah. So even
never
if,
tell me the odds.
So we often talk about the probability of there being life in the universe and life on a planet, as Chris just said, because there are so many planets that one of them's bound to have life somewhere. But then you've got to discover it, and I hadn't looked into the odds of discovering it before. So even though there may be 1 septillion planets in the universe, we may not discover barely like 100 million of them. Yeah, it's just crazy how few might know. And on that cheerful note, shall we? Any comments that you'd like to discuss?
Can I ask a question just before we get into that? I know I'm really messing up your flow, and I'm endeavouring to make your podcast
keep
to
feeding
my podcast. So with everything that's been going on in the world lately, and a lot of the stuff that actually you guys have been covering on your podcast, for instance, the Capitol building riots, etc. More and more, I kind of feel that, like, the shit that's happening around the world and in my life and peripheral to my life and whatever it is and things that I'm privy to. And
are we living in a simulation?
Are we living in a simulation? I am getting more and more fucking convinced by the day, fellas. And I'll tell you why, okay? Because when I was growing up, to bring it back to gaming, which is my remit, right?
Yeah.
I used to play a game called SimCity. You might have heard of it.
Oh, I know the one very well.
Where, for those who don't know, top-down simulation of how do you build a city and its pipes and get rid of its sewerage and deal with its traffic flow issues and zoning and this, that, the other, blah, blah, blah. Kind of boring, but kind of fun in its own way. But what was cool about that is, and I don't remember when they introduced it, so I'm just remembering now SimCity 2000. There was a drop-down tab, and in the drop-down tab, you could add a disaster. So you could add riots.
Oh, really? Wow.
Or you could add tornadoes or earthquake. And the whole idea was create your city and then create this disaster and see how your city kind of reacts to it and deals with it.
Yeah.
And it just kind of occurs to me that with all of this shit that's been going on, it's like, do you think someone up there, the scientists that are overseeing our simulation, have clicked down the tab of like fucking weird shit?
Yep.
Just to, you know, hey, COVID, yeah, cool, let that go. Oh, a new variant of COVID, yeah, that's all right. Capital bull, yeah, go for it. You know, Brexit, sure.
They've got to the equivalent of about 25 hours into Roller Coaster Tycoon, where you're like, I'm just going to build a whole load of roller coasters that don't have an end to them and just watch everyone fly off.
That's what it feels like sometimes, fellas.
The only benefit is that in Roller Coaster Tycoon, when that happens, everyone leaves the park. We can't leave this park, can we?
No,
we're just on the ride forever.
Do you think eventually everyone's going to go to sleep and time zones, no one's going to wake up until everyone's asleep. And then once everyone's asleep, they fucking reboot the Matrix. And we wake up, it's like, nothing happened.
Yeah, maybe. Some guy in a white suit and a white beard just talks rubbish at us.
Colonel Sanders.
Colonel Sanders.
Would you like some chicken? I can't tell you the recipe. It's a secret.
But this is the sixth one.
Yeah. All right, cool. Go ahead.
Well, normally we look at our favorite comments of the week and respond to some of the comments that have been sent to us. So I've got a comment by Camera Shy Coco, who... Hello, Coco. Welcome to the club. And it's a comment on the video that Martin put up last weekend, after our last podcast and before this one. A really good video, an interview with a very interesting person about... I'm going to try to say this. It's about psychedelic drugs. Yes, that word that Martin said.
I've probably butchered myself.
So it's the first of what may be a new series if you're going to like it. So go and watch it. Let us know what you think. And Camera Shy Coco says, Excellent inaugural episode. Also, kudos for keeping it mostly professional when you're interviewing your own brother about his research into shamanic potions in the Amazon. So, yeah, I agree entirely. Well done. It was very professional.
When you put it like that.
thank you very much. It was something new, something a little bit different, and it'd be great to have your feedback on what you thought about it, and also what kind of or who you would like to have on going forwards, or if you'd like to see more episodes, then just let us know, because I think it's something that, you know, is a little bit different, fun to do as well, and a good chance to talk to some intriguing people with intriguing stories. My comment this week is from the same video, and it's from Vivian Circle.
Oh yeah.
And so the question of the video was, should psychedelics be used in medicine? And Vivian Circle says, I absolutely believe they can help as long as they are administered in a safe way. People get results from psychedelics because you actually feel it, not just talking about it. Talking helps us up to a point, but you need to feel the pain in order to overcome it. And Western medicine always tries to numb the pain. And that was an interesting point.
Interesting, yeah.
Something my brother did talk about was that ayahuasca and psychedelics, but particularly ayahuasca, helps to often bring up things from the past. It makes it very current in your mind, some of the pains and troubles you've had in your past, which then allows you to overcome them. So I thought that definitely kind of feeds into that idea of having to feel something to overcome it. And yeah, I think especially a lot of Western medicines, you're probably right in thinking that they do sometimes try and numb pain and don't necessarily get over that root cause. So it'd be interesting to see whether ayahuasca and other psychedelics might be more widely accepted in Western medicine going forwards. We'll see.
It's actually good that we talked about that video. And this was not planned, but that video is talking about the role psychedelics might have in treating mental health problems. And our subject of today's video is the role that a non-psychedelic, in fact, not even a thing that you would ingest, but an experience you would have playing video games, possibly has benefits for mental health. And in particular, a recent study has just come out that suggests during lockdown, this very stressful year and this pandemic where the world has gone to hell, video games have played potentially a very important role in keeping us sane. And the question is, have they? And do they? So that's why we have Chris, our resident video game expert, to talk about this.
The penny just dropped.
Yeah.
This is why I'm here.
That's why you're here, Chris.
I get it now. I'm being exploited. This is what it feels like. Okay, I gotcha. Cool. Yeah, I like it. Okay.
So Chris, you're a big gaming fanatic.
Yes.
You play lots of different games. You live stream over at Hot Panic.
Twitch.tv/hotpanic. Thank you, Martin.
a little bit of a plug there. Have you found personally, on from your personal experience, that video games have had a helping hand in helping you overcome to connect with people? And if so, how?
Dude, completely. Okay, so so you're talking about it in terms of a COVID perspective, right? Where we've all been in lockdown, and how can you meet up with your loved ones and hey, you know what? Like, technology has never made it easier. I'm not just talking about gaming. Obviously, yes, you can jump into a game. You can meet up with your friends. You can play games with your friends. You can connect in that way. And it makes the world feel, you know, a little bit closer to you than you know, your four walls and that's it. And, you know, outside is the plague. And 28 days later, you don't want to go out there. but I guess from my perspective as well, it goes a little bit further than that. So maybe I am the right person to ask this question. Because when I immigrated to the UK from South Africa, I was having such a hard time kind of getting to grips with things. And really the thing that kind of brought me comfort was playing games with my friends. But, you know, having a schedule for that game and saying, like, Monday nights, I don't need to talk to you to let you know that this thing is happening and we should get together and play. It was more a case of saying, Monday nights, be on. You only communicate with me if you're not going to be on, if, you know, something comes up, whatever it is. So I used to have that, and that really, really grounded me and helped me acclimatize and get through the early years of immigration. So That was really helpful. It's helped loads in terms of COVID. Not only for the fact that it's a stress reliever, whether it's multiplayer or on your own. But yeah, like there's a funny thing. I could play a multiplayer game with a friend that I haven't spoken to in, call it a month as an example.
Yeah.
And as the game is loading up, we'll catch up, you know, and games don't take long to load up. You should know this, right? Like quite quick to get into a match of whatever you're doing or, you know, a world of whatever you're playing. So it's literally like 5 minutes of catch up and then you're in the game and then you're just talking about the game. So it's not even a case of saying like, I mean, it can be used as a tool, right, to catch up with people and have these long discussions. But I think that's maybe more the role of what Zoom or, you know, Google Meet or Teams or whatever it is, online conferencing kind of things are there for, probably more than what gaming is. But I think what gaming is kind of creating an atmosphere. I mean, I know it sounds kind of like wishy-washy, right? But you're creating this relaxed atmosphere where you don't go into a game to have a shit time. Right? Mm. No one, well, some people.
Apart from Jamie when he jumps into Warzone, knowing he's going
to. Oh, he gets so angry. Jamie playing Overcooked, there's no joy there whatsoever. But yeah.
That's like, a stressful game, to be fair.
Yeah, look, games could be stressful and games could be scary. Horror games are obviously very kind of like. Vogue.
Yes, I don't play those.
But I think the point is that maybe not to have, you know, to be entertained, when whether that's kind of getting your adrenaline up in a horror game or a comedic game that kind of gives you the chuckles, whatever it may be, or a multiplayer game where the stress could be high, like Warzone, like you said, Martin, we play quite a lot of those games. But I guess the atmosphere is always one of entertainment and fun. And when you're going in there, you relax, your stress levels go down a bit and you can just kind of like, you know, if you're on a PlayStation, you kind of sink into the couch, your shoulders kind of drop a bit, ease out, your muscles get less tense. You know, there's a cat on your screen, Martin.
There's a cat on my lap.
For those people watching on YouTube, yeah. There you go.
My cat Blue has just arrived. He does this. He doesn't sit on me usually. Well, he does sometimes. But every time in the podcast, he's always walking across the screen. Don't hit the mic. Come on.
That's cats, dude. Cats are douchebags. Okay. Known right. Douchebag.
Okay. All good. Sorry, yeah. Chris.
No, that's okay. I love cats. I love all animals, actually. So I'm
frequently,
happy.
I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like that. Come on, get your mind out of it.
How did he catch COVID? It was a bat. No, we'll move on.
Fruit bat, baby. They've got the furry chests and all. I like it.
I mean, one of the interesting points you said there, Chris, was creating this atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I think games can create that. But what they also do is create escapism. So it doesn't matter if it's a stressful game, particularly. It doesn't matter if it's horror or you're playing Overcooked and shouting at it like Jamie. or maybe being silent, more silently passive aggressive.
Yeah.
What matters is that you've your mind is switched off, and it's switched, well, maybe not switched off, but it's averted. Your attention is averted to something completely different for that time.
Yes, there's almost like an intersect, right, of the participants and a shared objective.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of what you're saying, Martin, is it takes your mind off of, oh my God, you know, am I going to get a food delivery, you know, because the slots are all gone, or, oh, the house is a mess. Oh, I got to do the fucking dishes in the kitchen. None of that matters, because what matters is you got to gun down the person in front of you, because, you know, he's going to gun you down unless you get him first, the bugger.
I'm sure your wife will agree, Chris, that the dishes don't matter, because you're,
yeah, I'm like, listen,
you need to
I'm
gun down
now,
that person,
so.
Okay?
Yeah. Well, interestingly, it seems that we now have the first serious statistics to suggest that everything you're saying is correct, because just for a bit of background and why I find this a very interesting story, because I think it was back in May 2019, the World Health Organization somewhat controversially officially recognized what they call gaming disorder, which I think most people refer to as gaming addiction. Now, to be honest, I still don't think an actual definition of what qualifies as a gaming addiction or gaming disorder really is. It's not as simple as if you play it this many hours in the day, or if you're constantly thinking about it. It's like any addiction, I guess it changes on depending on the individual. But the point is that 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, the World Health Organization said gaming disorder is a thing. Excessive gaming is bad. We should try to wean people, particularly young people, off games. Then in March 2020, when the pandemic hit and suddenly countries had to go into lockdown, but not every country was enforcing their lockdown or even prescribing a lockdown.
Yeah.
The World Health Organization said, I think they started a hashtag. What was it, like play alone together or something like that? And it was saying, people, and especially young men, stay at home, play video games, don't go out, don't interact with other people, socialize through video games because it will help stop the spread of the pandemic.
Very convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, very interesting that they had that kind of switcheroo.
But you've missed one correlation there.
Oh, yeah.
Robin, yeah.
Yeah.
So World Health Organization says, hey, gaming addiction and you know, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID hits, okay?
Yeah.
And then what you said is, yeah, and then World Health Organization says, hey, stay healthy by staying indoors and playing games. But you're missing that center point.
Yeah.
The games companies created COVID to counteract the fact that the World Health Organization said that they shouldn't be playing games.
We've been looking in the wrong place.
Exactly. This is tit for tat. It's classic.
We should be looking at Bethesda.
Classic misdirection. This is like the Prestige all over.
And to be fair, the gaming has grown massively as a result, so they might be onto something there.
It has.
A few facts. Twitch saw over 3 billion hours of content watched over the first quarter of 2020.
Wow.
A 20% increase from the previous year.
Yeah.
Microsoft reported a substantial increase in users of its Xbox Game Pass service in the months of March and April, with over 10 million subscribers. And of course, there were some unbelievable successes. The likes what were some of the biggest games of 2020?
Okay, the biggest one, Mark.
Animal Crossing.
I'll fill that in for you. So Animal Crossing came out exclusively on the Nintendo Switch in March 20th, 2020. The timing couldn't have been better for them, right?
Yeah.
So fast forward to now, it was the best-selling game of 2020, Animal Crossing. This like obscure, you play a villager and you kind of tend to your huts and shit. It's like not much gaming in it, but people got absolutely engrossed in it. And I think what happened was, you know, you talk about the zeitgeist, you know, the mood of the time, right?
Yeah.
And this Animal Crossing was the perfect zeitgeist for 2020. It was a game that you could play and you could play with other people, and other people were talking about it on Twitter and other social media platforms, and everyone was kind of like either getting, you know, FOMO, fear of missing out, and being like, god damn it, I need to get on Animal Crossing, or they were like, I need to show off my side of the Animal Crossing because this person's got fucking 55 ding dong bells and I've got 68 ding dong bells, so I'm gonna put that up there. I don't know if there's ding-dong bells in the game. I don't play it. But the point is that people spent $654 million on that game. Oh, wow. That's how much that game made.
Wait, it's pretty cheap, though, to buy. It's not like it's a...
So it's a Nintendo game. So it's a full price game. So it's about £60.
$60. Oh, okay, so it's quite pricey. Okay, I take that back.
£60, $60, somewhere there.
Back. Yeah.
But still, that is quite substantial. As of December 2020, they have sold 31.18 million units.
That's crazy.
That's mad. That's absolutely mad. And it's still going strong. It is still going strong. True. Okay. Less people are talking about it now on social media. It's almost like Pokemon Go. When Pokemon Go came out, got everyone outside walking. It was all over social media. Everyone in our office was playing it, and it was getting a little bit crazy
because it was ridiculous. It was
stupid. There's a Pidgeotto on the roof, and everyone just fucking runs up.
I didn't ever play it, but I remember a few times we went out for lunch. And we'd come out from somewhere, and everyone would walk the opposite way to heading back. And I was like, where is everyone going? And you stood there, just in the street. Like, they're like, oh, no, there's a Blastoise down here. I don't care. What are you doing? You just walked off. Mental. Imagine how many people do you reckon got hit by cars just looking at Pokemon Go?
Oh, too many. Too many.
But that's not the point of this podcast. We're claiming that video games are not bad for your health.
Gaming is good for you.
Gaming is good for you. We're not going to look at evidence that suggests it's bad for you. That's a nice balanced podcast. We're talking particularly about mental health, obviously, with Animal Crossing. And that must have helped a lot of people.
Well, again, it just kind of makes you feel... To go back to kind of more Neanderthal thinking here, okay? It almost brings out that tribalistic tendency in humans, right? You want to be a part of a tribe. You want to belong. You want to look after each other.
Yep.
You want to protect each other, talk about the same things, know the same things, you know, experience your stories through the same lens, as it were. And gaming allows you to do that in a very big way. And again, Animal Crossing was the shining example last year of saying, hey, there's a tribe here. Do you want to join the fucking tribe? Yeah. Get your, you know, get your spears and let's go pick some berries. You know, hunter-gatherers, but we're all in fucking Animal Crossing. 31.18 million of you.
Is Animal Crossing an example of what they call casual gaming? The kind of...
It most certainly is a casual game. Yeah.
You can drop in, drop out. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah. I mean, most people associate casual gaming with kind of mobile, don't they? As opposed to... You have to buy a Switch console. You have to spend $60 on it. Like, there's an investment there that you don't get.
There is, yeah.
You don't get... you don't have to put in for I don't know, like even a free game or a mobile game. But I get what you're saying. It's kind of... Yeah. It's chilled. It's chilled, isn't it? It's not intense. It's not competition kind of stuff.
Yeah. But I guess the point is that it doesn't matter whether it's a casual game or a more hardcore game. It doesn't matter if it's on a Switch, a PlayStation, a high-end PC, or even just a mobile game. It still can help you in the same way. It still alleviates that stress. It still kind of shields you from the bad things that are happening outside. It still connects you to the people that you are otherwise maybe struggling to connect with. Mm. You know, and in some respects, it can... You know, you can make friends online that you have never met before. You could, like, you know, you're in a party playing a game. They're playing really well. You say, hey, you're pretty good. Do you want to party up for the next one? Yeah, cool. You know, and that's how some online friendships get started. Mm. It's definitely helped me through COVID. As I've said, it helped me through immigration. literally, I was like, yeah, take my Switch and just let me through. They're like, but yeah, you know, like the mental health benefits are astronomical. I truly, truly believe that. And not only the mental side of things, but the physical side of things, because there was a study. I mean, they've had numerous studies, but again, there was another study, Martin, that came out. Robin, rather, because this is your kind of your boat. just because you had the... Talking about the study, right? Fine, yeah. So there was another study that was saying, again, reiterating the benefits of eye-hand coordination for younger kids who are playing the games and problem solving. You know, there are a lot of benefits to gaming that people might not immediately kind of think that there are there. But yeah, I'm very glad that the mental health aspect of it is kind of getting a bit of its time in the spotlight, as it were.
Yeah, and on that note, there are actually three studies that I'd like to talk about. And they've all been published very recently, within the last 6 months, and, well, at least conducted within the last 6 months. And one was published this month, one is about to be published in print this month, but it was actually published before Christmas online. Another one happened, I think, last September, August time. But the first one, actually, following up on what you were saying, Chris, in terms of the social aspect, it was a study recommending that... more thorough studies and investigation need to be carried out into the therapeutic possibilities of video games for social cohesion, and in particular for elderly people. So they weren't looking at younger people, but elderly people, because a lot of elderly people end up alone. They end up feeling very alone. They also end up very out of touch, not just by being alone, but also by being old, and therefore literally, in some cases, and I definitely experienced this, not understanding the younger generation. Like, genuinely, I watch some YouTubers and I sometimes catch a program on TV with teenagers talking. I'm just like, what? I didn't understand a word of what they just said. They just use a whole bunch of slang that I just don't get. And that gesture
doesn't take long at all.
I think those people are friends and they're doing something with their hands that I used to think was really offensive. What's going on here? And I can only imagine that, you know, 90-year-olds living alone in a flat in the middle of a city are just like, whoa, these young people, what are they talking about? So there's a study that's saying that actually video games might be a really great way to get these people, particularly older generations, to A, form friendships remotely, perhaps with other older people through multiplayer games online, or with other people, because, you know, I'm sure I've got friends online gaming who are probably 20 years younger than me, just that it's all anonymous and faceless, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Imagine exposing your granny to 12-year-old trolls in Call of Duty.
Friends with the
granny. Expose your granny, Martin.
But another benefit that they were suggesting is that you could have therapy games. So you can have games where they might not even be medical games, so to speak. They could actually be mainstream games that are sold for money, for profit, but they alternative, you could have actual gaming designed for medical purposes, mm-hmm. where the older generations could learn how to interact with the younger generations, essentially. This is a suggestion from the study, saying you could use video games to get generations to understand each other by the gameplay and by the characters they meet within the game. So that's one study, which I think was interesting. The other one... Sorry, Martin. Yeah.
I was just going to ask a question. Do you think that that's maybe slightly asymmetrical? Because it seems... I mean, it depends on the game and the activities that are being done.
Yeah.
But it's trying to get the old person to understand gaming, which is kind of seen as a young person's hobby slash activity. Yeah. It's just interesting. I mean, would the young person then have to... go and listen to classical music. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm talking about stereotypical older person.
Yeah. Get in the middle.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see how that would work. Yeah.
What you have is a game where it's dialogue trees, and the old person has to choose all the right responses in slang to the video game characters. And like, okay, I think that's what this means. Whilst the young players, they just have Radio 4. Playing constantly in the background, just constantly Radio 4.
Well, look, guys, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but the Nintendo Wii was actually really popular in old age homes.
Yes.
This is not a joke. It sounds like a joke.
Yeah.
But it was really, really popular, especially Wii Sports. So Wii Sports was a game that was bundled with Wii.
Yeah.
So it had bowling, golf, boxing, whatever it may be. So really what started happening is a lot of old age homes started getting Wii's, and it came with Wii Sports for free, and the interactivity that it offered, so it wasn't an online game obviously, but what it meant was people would get together within the old age home to play this game. The game was really simple to understand. It was motion controlled, so you didn't have to worry about any buttons or anything. You just flick your wrist. Unless you broke your wrist as an old person, it's entirely possible. Or if you're arthritic, then I feel sorry for you, but you know, you get what I'm saying. There was a lot of opportunity there for the elderly folk to kind of get involved in gaming, and it was actually really, really successful for them. It got a lot of people into shape, old and young. And I think that at that time that the Wii came out, and it was found that a lot of old age people were kind of using them in the old age homes and the retirement homes, what have you. A study came out on how gaming can help alleviate Alzheimer's.
Like puzzle solving kind of thing.
Puzzle solving, memory, all of these things.
Just using your damn brain, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, just use it. Brain training. Just use it, fellas. That's what you've been doing wrong the whole time. Just all you old folks just eating custard all the time. Just put the custard cup down, Fran.
I like custard.
And just fucking read a book or do a crossword or something. Sudoku. Perfect. Just do it.
Do a Sudoku. Do it.
But yeah, there's benefits.
Yeah.
Across the board there, for sure.
That's an interesting one. That's a great example of how, we didn't mention it earlier when we said, gaming has helped people during the pandemic, but simulated sports. Obviously, there's loads of people who would be itching to get back to their sports, and at least in our country, but I imagine most other countries as well, outdoor sports, no, not happening. Indoor sports, definitely not happening, possibly not even happening in 2021. But an interesting twist, there was a study that's been published just now, this month, and
just now, like 5 minutes ago,
literally just now,
hot off the press
right now, reading as we speak. And it was actually the result of a long-term study over 5 years of teenagers aged 11 to 14 and the impact of frequent gaming on their mental health. And here's an interesting thing. So I think it's around 4.4% of the global population are estimated to have depression, and about 3.6% are estimated to suffer some kind of anxiety disorder. So this study conducted by Cambridge University, I think, over the course of 5 years, looking at 11 to 14 year old boys and girls and their relationship with gaming and social media, found that boys aged 11 to 14 who played a video game once a day at least, or sometimes as little as once a week, but typically once a day, had a 25% reduction in depression, self-reported depression, this is, their perception of themselves as happy.
Yeah, yeah.
25% less depression rate in frequent gamers amongst boys. But it was different between boys who were physically active and boys who were not physically active.
Okay.
Which, so it was a study. So they were getting boys who were really into sports to play games, casual games as well as serious games every day. And they found that boys who played frequently, who were really into physical activity, actually had slightly higher rates of depression.
Okay.
So, it's kind of literally about... So the suggestion of that, I think, and they didn't say this in the paper, but I think the suggestion that I take from that, at least, is that it does depend on the individual. And what we should do, parents, take note, is if your child is really into video games, let them be into video games, because it's probably going to help their mental health massively. And if they're into sports, let them be into sports. Don't try to force any child to do what they don't want to do. I think that's the lesson that I would take from that statistic. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, as a twist, girls age 11 to 14 who had the same level of exposure to social media as boys age 11 to 14 had to video games, as in once a day, several times a day, had a 13% increase in depression rates. So actually, social media is worse for your mental health
That's because
than video
girls
games.
Are horrible to each other. They're absolute vile to each other.
And society is...
But hey, I'm maybe just be stereotyping.
I think
there, but
there's a tendency for people that use social media a lot in adolescence, from what I gather, to compare themselves with what they see online and to not necessarily understand that what you're seeing is, especially on things like Instagram, is probably the highlights of someone's day or someone's life, as opposed to the norm. And so you see all these smiling pictures of people on a beach or with friends or doing what, and you're thinking, what am I doing except for scrolling through pictures and pictures of happy people day after day? So so I'm not surprised by that at all.
No, I'm with you there. And I think just to kind of round this up, the statistical side of things, another study, which was actually a study of studies, so systematically looked at studies into mental health and video gaming, found that of 13 studies that qualified as involved studies of video gaming and mental health, of 13, 12 of them found positive correlations between good mental health and video gaming and low anxiety. So all the evidence at the moment seems to be saying video games are good for your health. And I like to think that we've covered, thanks to Chris, most of the reasons why video games can be good for your health. I'm not just in terms of, as an old person, getting a little bit of exercise with a Wii Fit or Xbox Kinect. If it's, is it still the Kinect? I don't know.
No. That's
what's it called now?
That's DOA. There's no Kinect.
There's no Kinect
on Xbox. No, it's done. Done and dusted.
Because it was integrated into the Xbox One, and now it's just... So.
Yeah, and then they removed it in the Xbox One. So afterwards, you bought an Xbox One without it. It doesn't matter.
Can you tell I do PlayStation? I'm just clueless when it comes to the Xbox. So there's physical benefits, not just in terms of your arthritis and your exercise, but also your brain exercise. There's a physical benefit to your brain, you suggested, in terms of saving off Alzheimer's and dementia. And then there's your mental health in general, your happiness and your anxiety levels are improved. And of course, in extreme circumstances like the pandemic that we've experienced, and I've definitely experienced this, I've had some great nights playing online with you guys, and I've felt fantastic as a result of it. And as someone who actually is really into board games can't be done without a group of people gathered around a table. But video games can be done definitely without a group of people gathered around a table. In fact, it's kind of hard to find a game where you can couch co-op, there are not many of those around these days.
No, it is much more few and far between, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think the definition of the gaming disorder, going back to that, the World Health Organization. I think the definition included gaming disorder being defined as if it causes an ongoing negative impact on your life.
Yeah.
So wasn't like parameters of how many hours to play to be having a gaming addiction, so to speak.
Right.
It was this kind of more generalized definition of this negative impact on being able to carry out the tasks you need to do every day, and also to fulfill your wants and desires. So whether that's socializing with people outside of video games, or conducting a particular hobby, or advancing your work aspirations, if it's affecting those things negatively, then they defined it as being an issue and becoming an issue.
But doesn't that anger you a bit? That angers me a lot. Maybe because I'm an advocate for gaming. But if I take my gamer hat off and just be more the pragmatic person that I try to be when I'm looking at these things, it's everything in moderation, right? Like, I could say that I could potentially have a water addiction because if I drink water too much, I could die. You know, like, that does happen. If you drink too much water, you could die. Yeah. But the point is this, is if I start drinking too much water, and people say, hey, stop drinking too much water, you're going to die. I'm like, no, I like fucking drinking water. Leave me alone. My body's 70% water. And I need to just top it up. it's like anything could be labeled an addiction, right?
Yeah.
And I get annoyed by these kinds of classifications, okay? Like, we see it with recreational drugs all the time. All you need to do is shift a definition and it goes from a criminal offense to a health benefit in terms of recreational marijuana, as an example.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The weed, the Mary Jane.
That's why it's legal in some states and not in others.
Yeah, but this is it. And why? Because of a classification.
Yeah,
I think the thing they're trying to say is if there are those negative consequences, which does broaden out the definition. It also puts into question things like people when they call themselves a functioning addict. If you're functioning, is it then an addiction? If you're actually able to function and fulfill what you want to fulfill, is that you know, does that even make sense? But anyway, it's an oxymoron.
It's like alcoholics, recovering alcoholics always say they haven't touched a drop of alcohol in 30 years, but they always say, I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
And it's part of their recovery thing. And
what
would the equivalent for video game addiction be? Like, I'm a video game addict. When was the last time I played a video game? 35 years ago on the SNES. No,
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. It is different, surely. It has to be different when you're dealing with a substance versus a...
It has to be, yeah. Because it's a... Well, maybe not. I don't know. Because it's...
It's labels, fellas.
You still
it's
have
labels.
A physical reaction. No, but I'm sympathetic to both because I think it's... I think you're right, Chris. It's like, given the benefit of the doubt, the World Health Organization was merely recognizing that a problem exists for some people, and that therefore, if it's recognized officially by the World Health Organization, then medical organizations and health services can begin to seriously address it as a potential.
But then, did they think about the damage that it could done? Did they think of the inverse? So obviously, I'm not saying that they went in. You know, as fucking dastardly and muckly, kind of in the corner, giggling to themselves. But obviously, it was coming from a point of like, hey, if we recognize it as an addiction, then you can get a treatment for it, right? Yeah. Or you could, you know, it's a classification could help this thing. Mm-hmm. But did they really, really, really take the time and consideration to think of the inverse, you know, and how much damage something like that could do? Because, I don't know. It's a weird one. I'm obviously very passionate about it on the one side of things. I can see the argument to be made for the other side, but I do not necessarily agree with it.
No, I was literally about to say, where I agree with you, Chris, with your reaction to that classification of gaming disorder, is that video games to me seem peculiar in a way that they've been treated by society as a whole, in that I can't think of another thing where... the bad press has dominated it since its inception.
Robert, it's absolutely insane. Yeah, school shooting occurs, and it's like, you've got to be careful of those games, boys.
Exactly.
But Dory, you could still go down to your like local Walmart and buy a fucking AR-15.
And back in the 80s, it was as simple as, oh, nerds who were losers and will never get a girlfriend and have really bad physical health. They're the only people who play video games. If you want to be a successful person, you do sports and you do studies. Yeah. And I find that interesting because contrast smoking. Which was recommended for your health
by doctors, no less.
Yes, exactly. For centuries,
doctors recommend Lucky Strike
before they found out that smoking is actually one of the worst things you can do to yourself. Similarly, alcohol, it's still legal. I'm still happy it's legal as someone who likes a tipple now and then. But it's for years and years, people just accept it. Oh, it's a thing. And if you get drunk, then it's the individual's problem they've got drunk. And then now I see, but you know, in more recent times, it's been, oh, actually, alcohol. Is addictive and it's potentially a problem. And it's the same with even recreational drugs. Most of them were legal and it took time for people to realize, oh, this is really bad. Cannabis, as we know, there was more than likely a corporate conspiracy to make hemp and cannabis illegal, when whereas for decades, if not centuries, it was perfectly legal and people actually recommended it for all kinds of things. And then things like LSD was legal and developed by the government, and then it was like, well, actually, this stuff is really bad. And now the Beatles are taking it, and everyone realizes, oh crap, actually, maybe we shouldn't have people.
Everyone's in a fucking yellow submarine.
Yeah, what's going on? So I think video games has suffered for no reason that I can really fathom ever since its inception.
It's just the target, right? It's passing the buck, as it were. If it's an easy target, much like my future podcast, if it's an easy target, then fucking go all in.
Yeah.
If you're trying to take attention away from something else, go for it. And I don't know, here's a question for you guys. Okay, do you think that this this new study purely came about because of how many people, like, is there a correlation between COVID hits, everyone's at home, they're bored out of their mind, so what do? Everyone picks up gaming sees a boom, as an entertainment industry it goes straight up to number one. All these games are selling millions of dollars, millions of units sold.
Revenue in the US alone increased by 25% for the industry.
Which is massive, right?
Yeah, hugely.
And it's almost like you think to yourself, do the people doing these studies say, hey, this is a popular thing that your average Joe is getting into now, not some of these delinquents, like the 14-year-old children in their mother's basements, and it's almost like we got to find a positive spin on this because everybody's doing it. And if we come out now and say, violent video games are bad for you, you know, like, or video games are the new televisions that you shouldn't put your kids in front of and they're just going to rot their brains, all of a sudden it's like, well, it's not going to stop because everyone's in lockdown. Well, some people are in lockdown. So we got to get a positive spin on this, because how bad would it be now if we say to people, don't play your games, when that's all they got?
Interesting. I mean, who benefits from that?
Who watches the Watchmen?
I'm not quite sure who would benefit from them either putting a positive or a negative spin on it, just in terms of as a researcher.
So you get what I'm saying? Yeah. It's kind of like it's almost like riding the wave. It's like
I get it.
Let's ride on that wave.
I understand you're more likely to get funding if there's a lot of interest into the field and if more people are doing it. 100%. I think that's probably why there's been so many more studies, is because it has become the number one medium, entertainment medium, over the last few years. And it's such a young medium that not many studies have been done into it. So if you're someone who's a researcher, you think, well, I mean, I could become a big name in this field. If we come up with something that's kind of groundbreaking, or shed some insight. But I think you're always going to get people that are definitely against video games at all costs. I know that it was today that a US Republican, Marcus Evans of Illinois, said that games like GTA 5 promote psychological harm, he's trying to get them banned. So you're always going to have these people, who say this. And if there are people who are saying that video games are going to rot your brain and are going to cause an increased level in carjackings in Illinois, then despite a lockdown, then it's worth conducting these studies to at least provide that counter argument and provide the scientific basis for the opposite, because these people are lawmakers and they base the law on their own thoughts and feelings. So to have some counteracting scientific evidence makes sense.
And as we've learned with climate change, even when the science is all one way, it takes far too long for the politicians to act. So if we can get in early on the video games, then or it's not really early, I suppose, but it feels like...
Get in now.
Yeah, get in now.
Send him some care packages.
Speaking of mental health and social activity and games, shall we all have a quiz?
Oh, yes. Ooh, love a quiz.
So, as always, we'll have 10 questions. Buzzers. First to the buzzer gets the first chance at the question.
That's how it works.
Classic quiz. And there'll be a bonus question for a tie. By the way, this quiz was written a while ago, so I'm not sure what the answers are. And
it's a Christmas quiz.
It's a Christmas quiz. That's the thing. Yeah. No, it's not like that. But it's certainly it wasn't written with you in mind, Chris. So
that's fine.
So this is, I'll be interested to see if Alex is listening to this at home and how he does
compared to us.
But before we could do the quiz, you've got to have a buzzer. So, gentlemen, play me your buzzers, Chris.
Okay, this is mine. It's a little bit long, but you'll get the gist of it.
That's what she said. That's brilliant. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they're saying.
Neither, but I like
what
it.
What are they saying?
Basically, the guy's saying, oh, fuck, I've lost it. The guy's saying, what? And then the other guy says something like, oh, but you're already dead. Some shit.
Before he kills him. Yeah.
That sound, that's from Metal Gear Solid, right?
Yeah, the exclamation mark. Yeah, attention. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Nice. Go on, Martin, what's yours?
I've gone for a viral classic from the last, when was it, 3 weeks ago?
I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
Excellent. I like
that's
it.
Great.
The best thing about that video, just as an aside, are the cat's eyes. Just like looking down.
Moving around, yeah.
Nervously.
Really odd.
Yeah.
I'm not a cat.
So good.
Such a good person.
So good.
So good. All right, then. Well, on to question number one. Gentle start to the quiz. Okay. It's a closest wins. You just, whoever's the closest to the answer gets the point.
Okay.
And the question is, in what year was the Heinz company founded?
Heinz
of 57 varieties fame.
Beans fame.
Baked beans. Chris. Oh, okay. Let's play it.
Gotta let it play. Oh, fuck's sake. What have I done? Okay, so I'm going to take a stab in the dark here because I actually don't like condiments. So it's maybe a bit lost on me. But I'm going to say 1886.
Okay.
That's a very...
57 varieties of tomatoes. 57 tomatoes in the Heinz ketchup.
Does the 57 relate to...
What?
No.
Varieties I don't of something. Know. 57 varieties of... Now that you've said, what is it? I'm like, actually, varieties
variety
of what?
Beans?
No. Beans? It must be just tins. I don't know what that...
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, Martin.
Yeah, what did I say? 1886?
1886, yeah.
I mean, which is mental.
The order.
Okay.
1886, yeah.
I mean, it could be that old, but I don't know. I'll go new.
Could be older, Martin.
I'm just going to go...
Think about it.
I'm going to go for a nice round number. Like, I don't know. I do not know. So I'm going to go for a nice round number, 1900.
1900. And Chris is closer. 1869.
Very good.
Not actually that far off.
Very good.
Not far off. No. 1860. Oh, 69.
69, dude.
I see what you've done there.
Of course.
69, dude.
69, dude. Been the third three, by the way.
Okay, hold on. I've got to reset. Good. Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, you're ready. Question number 2. 1-0 to Chris. According to Nielsen ratings, what was the most streamed show in the US in 2020 during lockdown?
The most streamed... I'm trying to think of the shows that aired now.
Yeah, Chris?
Yeah. Oh, why did it stop? Was it Queen's Gambit?
It was not, although that was, I think, the third most popular Netflix show.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Fuck, hold on.
But this is not just Netflix. This is streamed across all networks.
Oh, okay. I think I've screwed up big time. Yeah, but okay.
Okay. Well, Martin, have a go, and then Chris can have a go. Yeah.
My mind's gone a little bit blank because it is a little bit late. I was trying to think of what was kind of big. You're saying it was streamed across, which makes me think it possibly wasn't Netflix, even though Netflix was like the biggest thing. I'm not going for not Netflix.
I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
I'm going to go for Netflix's bit of rivals. I'm going to go for The Mandalorian.
Good choice, but no.
But no.
No.
Okay. Is it... Okay, hold on. Do I get to go again, or is it...
Yeah, go again,
Oh, fuck.
It wasn't
No, it wasn't any form of... Well, it might have been, I don't know. I don't have specifics.
Okay.
Okay, hold on. Martin, do you have no idea? Or do you want to give another?
I'm trying to.
I can give you
to...
a clue if you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, give a clue, and then we're both back in the game.
A little clue.
That was not meant. That was not meant to happen.
It's not.
I just blew my load a bit too early.
It's not a recent show. This show has ended its run.
Okay.
Oh, fuck me.
show's ended its run that's suddenly really popular. It's
still
again.
The most streamed thing in the US.
Oh, okay. Let's try it.
I'm here yep. live. That's not, I'm not yep. a cat.
Is it The Office US?
It is. It is.
Nice.
Between
nice.
Them, Americans watched 57 billion minutes of The Office last year.
That's crazy. I'm not sure. People yeah. watch it over and over and over again because it's easy to do that, isn't it? You watch yep. the series and then you can start yeah. again.
I guess like what I do on Netflix is I put on that 70s show just to have it in the background, not knowing to watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah.
So
that kind of thing. Yeah, I'm surprised there's a lot though. Of passive, people liked it so much.
Passive viewing. But, yeah. yeah.
If that's the actors good, get good. A slice, because if there's royalties, yeah, you know, time, the episode so, show, you? That's
yeah. yeah.
You get cast in that show, you're in the money. Okay, yeah. so one all. Okay, going to question three, a cooking question. So put your chef's hat on.
Okay.
In cooking. What's the difference between Chinese parsley, cilantro, and coriander? Yes, Chris.
I'm here live.
I think that was Chris.
It's too late, Martin. Too late, Martin. There is no difference. They're the same thing.
Yeah.
Correct. They are the same thing. Chinese parsley, cilantro, and coriander are all mm-hmm. the same plant and interchangeably used to describe the leaves. I read an article that was trying to justify the different names describe different parts of the plant, but it's like, no, they don't.
No, it's to do with the Italian or French origins, I think.
It is.
In coriander and cilantro.
Cilantro.
Yeah. Like Spanish, yeah. So, Spanish, is it? Okay. Americans use cilantro because of Mexico. They get it from Mexican Makes cuisine. Sense. It's a very mm-hmm. big thing in the salsa. And of course, Mexicans use the Spanish word, which is cilantro. Coriander is the French word. Britain, French cuisine is, well, the French defined our cuisine to, pretty much in terms of the language. And then Chinese parsley, I think it's just...
There'll be a Chinese
word. Well, they couldn't say the Chinese word, so they're just like, yeah, okay, whatever, yeah, Chinese parsley, whatever.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
It's, yeah, people go to China and be like, oh, this looks like parsley. We'll just call it Chinese parsley. And then they get back to America and Britain and just like, it's coriander. I'm like, oh, all right, never mind.
No, it's exotic.
Chinese so, parsley, damn it.
2-1 to Chris, going into question four. Another like closest wins. Another one. So, okay. Yeah. And this is following on. This is a question that genuinely came to me because in of recent things we've discussed in recent podcasts. Mm-hmm. So, Martin, you may have looked this up too on your own. But
the answer is Dick Turpin.
And he's not Dick Turpin, sir.
Oh, okay, shit. I thought I'd just take a pun.
It had to be Dick, of course.
That's your guess.
On average, how many eggs does a chicken lay every year? On average. Your average chicken. Yeah.
Your average chicken.
Yes, Chris.
I'm going to say... Hold on. Got to do my maths because I'm really poor at maths. 728.
Okay.
So two a day, you're thinking.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
On average, some will be barren, though.
Jesus.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
And you're looking at male and female chickens here, right? Are you looking, or just female?
I think it's female.
Chicken
it's
and
female.
Then cockerel, yeah. Is that we're going for the definite? Okay. Okay, I'm going to go for slightly less. I'm going to go for 550 eggs.
Okay.
550, it's a good number.
Well, Martin, you are closer, so you get the point. But the actual upper limit of the average chicken is 280 eggs a year.
Less than one a day, they're rubbish.
Yeah. The record...
I was thinking, should I do one a day? And I thought, no, nah, but how often do eggs... Like, eggs come in the cartons of six.
Each chicken lays six eggs a day. That's my assumption. There's so many eggs.
Math.
One carton, math. Some do 12.
Apparently, the Guinness World Record for a chicken... laying the most eggs in a given year is 340 in the single year.
Okay, so quite a way off.
Samsonite, way off.
Yeah. Oh well. So that's two all. Going to question five. Mm. You've heard of the Lewis chessmen?
Oh, big time.
Viking.
Me and Lewis, fucking.
A Viking chess set from the Isle of Lewis in Scotland, carved out of ivory. Famously, they've got a little warrior biting a shield, a berserker. Nice. Carved from ivory, but what kind of ivory?
Forward with it. I'm here live. That's not. Not yes, Martin.
I'm not a cat. It's not going to be cat ivory. Let's go for so traditional elephant. Let's go for rhino horn.
Interesting, but not correct.
Okay.
Yes, Chris.
Walrus tusk.
Nailed it.
Nice.
Oh yes. Walrus. Well, it was either that or narwhal tusk. So
I'm glad
I
went. Yeah.
I always go for narwhal. That would be wow. Okay, yeah.
A little bit more, you know, widespread. I think
In that area, in that part of the world. Yeah. 3-2 to Chris. Going into question 6. In minutes, okay. How long is a game of rugby league?
To go forward with it. Yes, I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
It's too good not to let it run. A game of rugby league is 80 minutes.
It is indeed correct.
If anyone would have got it, I'm not ashamed. Martin is a big rugby dude.
Yeah,
I like rugby.
You know.
Yeah, it's the same for both. Yeah. So it's kind of a misleading question. It's like, oh, it's got to be different. No, actually, it's the same. So that's 3-3. Oh my gosh, going into question 7. This is going to be a very tight quiz. Jeff Lebowski is better known as what?
I'm here live.
What was the scene?
I think you got there first, Chris. You got there first.
Yeah, you sure?
Yeah.
It's the dude.
It is the dude, yes.
The dude abides.
The dude abides. We needed his chill this year. That's the only way to get through. In fact, he was rocking the 2020 look 25 years before it was.
Yeah, we didn't know it. He was a time traveler.
There you go.
He came back to warn us, but then he got too stoned and he was just like, whatever, man.
Whatever, man. Okay, so we're on to 4-3.
4-3, yeah.
Question number 8. Louise. This question is actually based on the theme of today's podcast.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Inspired by the theme of today's podcast.
Inspired by the same printer.
Exactly, yeah. True or false?
Okay.
Tetris can help people recover from PTSD.
Yes, Chris.
I think that was Chris, yeah.
Well, that's an easy one, right? Yes.
Yeah, it is. True. 2018 study found that Tetris helps people recover from PTSD, which
why not
but even when the music's getting really really fast, you know, and you're in like level 50 or whatever, there's some soldier there like, I'm having flashbacks.
I had to stop playing Tetris because I kept getting Tetris dreams where I was figuring out the blocks in my mind when I was trying to sleep. Yeah, that wasn't good. That wasn't relaxing or comforting or some kind of therapy.
My wife is amazingly good at Tetris. I struggle as soon as it starts getting fast, but I've just stood there watching her playing Tetris as it's like super speed. You know, like when it's so fast, it doesn't even appear on the screen. It just like lands at the bottom. She can do that. And I just don't know. I don't know how you do that. It's absolutely incredible. Okay, so we're on 5-3, I think.
Blimey, I need to get the next two.
Ooh, Martin, there's still a chance, Martin. There's a slight chance. Question.
I mean, I'd like it to go to a tiebreaker. That would be always fun.
Always fun. Question number 9. This is not a closest wins. I need the correct number for this. How many cities are there in Scotland?
This is not fair. I'm a foreigner.
Okay.
I mean, so is Martin, technically.
Yes.
Yeah, true.
I'm here live.
Yes, Martin.
Is it that few? I was going to go for 4.
That is incorrect, I'm afraid.
Okay,
well, let's just fucking do
16. That is also incorrect. In the other direction.
I'm just going to have a quick.
If you think you know, you have another guess. Otherwise, I'll just.
Is that a city?
If you think you can work it out from your knowledge, your geographical knowledge of.
I only know 3.
I'm just trying to think of all the Scottish cities I know.
Yeah, I'm guessing you both know Edinburgh and Glasgow.
Edinburgh, Glasgow,
yeah.
Dundee.
That was one.
Ooh.
Aberdeen, is that one?
I can't say.
Okay.
8.
That is incorrect.
because you said I can't say, I'm thinking that's it then. It's Glasgow, Edinburgh, and Dundee. But probably not Aberdeen though. Although it's Aberdeen. And then there's also like St Andrews, is that a city? Or is it a town?
Yeah, exactly. Like what makes up a city?
I think St Andrews likes to think it's a city,
St Mirren, is that a place? That's a place, right? Or is that a football team?
Ninians.
Helen Mirren. That's an
Helen stage. Mirren.
We'd all like to go to Helen Mirren.
Okay, 6.
Oh man. You said 8, you said 6. The answer is 7. You're both either side of it. All right. Yeah, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen is one, Dundee, the other three. There's a northern one at the northernmost point, Inverness.
Inverness.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard of that before.
Perth. Inverness. A city.
I definitely wouldn't go that.
Yeah. Yeah, not one you think of necessarily. Mm. And the other one you have heard of, it's Stirling.
Stirling.
Of the castle. Okay. And the battle thing. So.
Yeah. Okay.
That means it's 5-3 going to question 10.
Done, Chris.
But still, Martin could make it a close one.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Question number 10. In which country was the hot dog invented?
Oh, my buzz is not.
Wait, make that sound.
Austria.
Incorrect.
Incorrect?
Not Austria.
I thought it was Germany. Frankfurt.
It is Germany. It is
Frankfurt.
See, I was thinking Vienna sausages.
Yeah, the Wiener.
I see.
But the Wiener is an adaptation of the Frankfurter, sadly. Yeah.
Bastards.
I know.
Oh, well, it was all... Come on, listen. Because back then it was all the Austro-Hungaro Empire, right? So technically, who's right, who's wrong? I don't know.
I mean, also, when it was invented, Germany didn't exist. It was a bunch of states that would become Germany. So technically, you're both wrong. And I'm wrong for giving that answer. But I'm accepting the answer,
But I
Germany.
Did say Frankfurt as well.
You did actually say Frankfurt. So that's, it would have been the city-state of Frankfurt. Fair. Well done. Okay, so 5-4. Well done, Chris. You've won your premier quiz on the Just Interesting podcast.
Well done, Christopher.
Well done.
Excellente. Do you have the tiebreaker question? Can we just
do it? Yeah. Let's do it. Okay.
Let's do it.
Cool. So, bonus question. Which number did the Romans not have a numeral for? Yes, Chris.
Zero.
Yeah. Correct.
Zero.
Wow, knowledge. Yeah.
Makes knowledge. Makes sense. Amazing.
What was it? Makes sense. Fucking base, knowledge.
Great. Well, that's
excellent. Yeah.
Oh, these Super Show podcast fellas are smart. They keep winning our
quizzes.
Yeah. Not just pretty faces, yeah.
This is why we can't have all of us on the same podcast at once, because then we'd just be the Just Interesting fellas would just be so embarrassed.
I kind of want to do
it. Well, we should do it, yeah. And we should do Twitch streaming.
So we're a handful of episodes ahead of you guys.
You are indeed, yeah.
And maybe for some kind of a milestone, maybe like number 100 or something, let's just do it. Let's just, come what may, embrace the chaos. I mean, assuming that people, you know, your audience likes me. But, you know, there we go.
Well, let us know in the comments. Do you like Chris? Have you had a good time with Chris? I've had a great time. I think Martin's had a great time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chris.
I've had a great time, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for being on. It's been wonderful, especially with your insights on video gaming. That's been fantastic. And we'll hopefully have you back again sometime.
Absolutely.
Hope so.
And thank you for listening to us. Thank you for watching us, if you're watching us on YouTube. And a massive thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and YouTube members who help keep this podcast going. As always, stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
See ya.